I'm fine. Okay, dear guests and dear colleagues, my name is Nuha Polat, and I would like to welcome all of you to our second lecture of our series in the semester on Decentering Europe, Postcolonial, Post-Bloc Perspectives for a Reflexive European Ethnology. As most of you may know, in our first lecture last week, we started our discussion of Decentering Europe with Shalini Randeria, who gave a talk about entangled modernities and postcolonial perspectives on Europe. It's a great pleasure to introduce you our guest speaker today, Nilüfer Göle, who is a professor of sociology at School for Advanced Studies in the Social Science in Paris. She was also a professor at Boğaziçi University in Istanbul from 1986 to 2001. And in 1996 to 1997, fellow at the Wissenschaftskolleg in Berlin. She was also in the United States and has seminars in various universities in Europe and Turkey. Göle is one of the most important scholars on Turkish modernization and the European confrontation with the Islam. She analyzed Islamism as a set of cultural practices and lifestyles in the Turkish context and beyond. Her research themes are Islamic veiling, public sphere, secularism, and multiple modernities. She is the author and co-editor of a number of books published in several languages, as English, German, French, and Turkish. It would be a very long introduction if I told all the articles and books she published. Therefore, I'm going to introduce only some of her very known publications. Her most famous book, Modern Mahrem, in Turkish, The Forbidden Modern Civilization and Veiling from 1991, translated into German with the title Republik und Schleier, claims that the Turkish modernization is a sort of homogenizing process. She tried to analyze modernization through different directions and various modernization processes other than the Western experiences. And together with Ludwig Adnan, Göle is the co-editor of Islam in Public, which was first published in German in 2004, called Islam in Sicht, der Auftritt von Muslimen im öffentlichen Raum. The book includes case studies from secularist Turkey, non-secularist and post-revolutionary Iran, and from Europe, and proposes a new comparative perspective to understand the ways Islam becomes visible in public spaces. Her latest book, Europe and Islam, The Lure of Fundamentalism and the Allure of Cosmopolitanism, was published in this year, 2010. She is currently conducting a European-scale research project entitled Islam in the Making of a European Public Sphere. Her sociological approach aims to open up a new reading modernity from a non-Western perspective that in turn produce a broader critique of Eurocentrism in the definition of secular modernity. Göle is here today to speak about and introduce the concept of interpenetration to conceptualize the cultural difference in the spatial and temporal proximity. The title of her talk is Interpenetrations, Islam, Turkey, and Europe, and which invites us to think and discuss about the perspectives from I will say again, maybe non-postcolonial and non-postblock perspective. Before I give the words to Göle, I will inform you that after Göle's talk, we are going to a restaurant named Chips in Jägerstrasse 35. My colleague Manuela, Manuela will give you more information about that after the presentation. I will now take the opportunity to invite you all to join us after the presentation. And thank you very much. I give you the word to Göle.
Thank you very much. I'm very, really very happy to be with you today. And when I received the program of the series of the seminars, I said, I have to travel once again, because this is always this ambivalent feeling that we all have. We want to stay where we are and continue writing and doing our work. And then there are temptations that we cannot turn down. And this was a real temptation for me. A temptation in the sense that I liked very much the way the program was formulated, and I said, well, here I will feel at home, I hope, that some of the ideas that I was trying to develop already are also followed and developed somewhere else, so we can really exchange a kind of conversation. So I thank Labor Europa, I think this is the name of your lab, to invite me, this word, Decentering Europe, Post-colonial, post-block perspectives for a reflexive European ethnology. I like the way you have put discuss Europe anew. That's what I share, first of all, because we have to rediscuss Europe again, maybe from a different perspective, and not as an apparently autonomous, self-centered process, and I underline self-centered process, but rather a part on a province of increasing interdependencies in a post-colonial multipolar world. Yes, this is, it depends what you understand from it. In my case, I will say in a few words, decentering Europe means recentering Islam. That will be my talk, right? Maybe I should have named it like that. My colleagues, when they saw my papers, they were anxious. They said, but we want to publish it. But I said, I always come when I am stimulated. I'm trying to develop some new perspectives and to make my work in progress. So it might be a kind of monologue, thinking that I was going to reach out. We'll see if this was a monologue or this would make sense also for you. Because this frame, the way you have framed it, it's very conceptual as well. Not only, although you are in the ethnography department, the way you have framed it is more problematic, decentering Europe. Can we change our frame of thinking? So that's why I think I'll try to do my own homework to say in which sense I would like to invite you to change our frame of thinking. So first thing is I will ask you and myself, what kind of events in Europe which makes us change our conceptions of Europe and also course of history? What are the moment builder events? What were the events that are empirically important in the present, but also maybe in the past? How we give a sense of hierarchy to these events? I'll ask you the question, the fall of Berlin Wall or the destruction of Mostar Bridge? I think it's a very easy question for you, especially if seen from Berlin. You'll all tell me the fall of Berlin Wall. Of course, evident. Well, I'll try to work against this common sense, because I think it is true, the common sense, and it became a collective memory of Europe, is much more important, is the fall of Berlin Wall and not the Mostar Bridge during the civil war and ethnic cleansing in Bosnia. Although two are interrelated because of the dismantlement of Yugoslavia, the fall of Berlin Wall and the ethnic cleansing in Bosnia. But my point here is not a historical analysis, but to understand what are the events that we really recall, which are the events that we recall, which becomes part of the collective memory, like 9/11 became a global collective memory, and the fall of Berlin Wall became the memory, maybe, of European Union. Of course, it meant the symbol of unification of Europe and its expansion towards post-bloc countries. It meant also the celebration, it's a good thing, of the European unification. But at the same time, Mostar Bridge was debated. It is not totally absent, but it is more like it after its reconstruction in the archives. It is not in the collective public memory, but it is in the archives. So I would say the source of reflexivity, where does it come from for a researcher? Do you work on already the given collective memory or the absences? Sometimes the absences can be also important. Not only the ones that are repressed, like repressed or officially non-recognized memories of colonialism or genocides or massacres, but the Bosnian one, the Mostar Bridge, is a kind of void, kind of absent memory from the European culture. So I think it's kind of sociological imagination that you have to make to bring it into our public awareness. It's not ethnographic work. It's a kind of Mills, what Mills would call sociological imagination. A colleague of mine has asked me, how came you thought about Mostar Bridge? In my book, I have used that image. I said, I don't know. I mean, there are many things, but it's also sociological imagination. And of course, knowing, reading on these issues. Why I give this too? Because if we think the course of history of Europe is, maybe we thought at the first level, is much more determined by the fall of Berlin Wall, but maybe not. It is the fall, the destruction of Mostar Bridge, that is the Muslims in Europe, which becomes more and more important. Whereas the fall of Berlin Wall is already post-bloc perspective. It's already the end of communism, which has already ended. Whereas the issue of Muslims within Europe is becoming more and more decisive for the course of, at least for the future of Europe. That's the hypothesis I am, of course, making to share with you. It's open to discussion, but at least this is the idea that I am putting forward in a blunt way, saying that it is the trouble with Muslim Europe that we are facing. Muslims within Europe, that's why I wanted to take the Mostar Bridge, because it helps us to cut away from each time when we speak of Muslims, of the immigration framework. That's what I wanted to operate in your minds already, a kind of displacement in relation to Islam. Each time we speak of Islam in Europe, it's a immigration issue. When I speak of Bosnia or the bridge, it is Muslims within Europe. When you go to Sarajevo, Bosnia, Muslims will tell you, one day they woke up and they found their century-old European identity in question. They have never questioned their identity. They always thought themselves as Europeans. And then, now, people are questioning, and they find themselves questioning if they are making part of Europe or not. So there is a problem of this hyphen between being Muslim and European. So we can think that some of the unprecedented, in unprecedented ways and unexpected ways, the course of European history is transformed. And this is, I think, Islam gives that impulse in an unprecedented and unexpected way. It doesn't mean that in the history there were no Islamic presence in Europe, but today there is some kind of acceleration of history in this encounter that we are becoming more and more aware in an unprecedented ways through controversies. I will say also that when I give conferences, Europe is a cold subject, Islam is a hot subject. And whenever people discuss of Europe, it is some kind of technical issues, it's institutional. Nobody believes in it. And more you are European, less you believe in it. More you are on the periphery, more you have desire to make part of it. That's also the case. Newcomers like Europe much more than Germans and French, because they are within Europe. And nobody is passionate about it. Whereas Islam takes you to other countries, make it passionate, everyone is mobilized on Islamic issues. Mr. Habermas said, there is no European public, nobody is interested in issues concerning Europe. But he was looking to the wrong issue, because he couldn't decenter Europe. I'm sorry not to be very respectful. He was not recentering Islam within Europe. So this is my argument, is that Islam is in the making of a European public sphere. European publics are today constructed, constituted by Islamic circulations. Circulations, I would say, because ideas, issues, people like me, if I was speaking about pure European issues, nobody would have invited me. Islam makes things mobile, people and ideas. It creates markets. It's transversal. Okay, it is this impulse, it's this creative force. Start changing. So I think this idea of, in the perspective, when we say decentering this displacement, we need to operate this displacement. And also, I think the most important thing is, I wanted to develop in this talk, is space-time matrix. How to understand the encounter between Europe and Islam in a different space and time matrix that I will call, inspired by Bakhtin, Mikhail Bakhtin, who is a linguist and trying to decipher literary texts, by Chronotop. He has much different also concepts like carnivalesque public and so on. But here I want to use the notion of Chronotop to help us maybe to think in new ways of decentering Europe and recentering Islam. Right? Chronotop is like chrono and topos, so bringing these two Latin and Greek origin words together, trying to, for him, it's a mediation of human experience in time and in space, not only for literary narrative, because human experience is both practice, praxis, but also narrative. So it is a chronotop is this space and time issue maybe we need to decipher more closely in decentering Europe in relation to Islam, not from a distance, but from within. That's what I mean in recentering Islam, because I think that is something we have had a difficulty thinking, that Islam is an outside, and still we are discussing what is the frontiers of Islam. Is an outside, something foreign, coming from by migrants, coming from the Middle East, or is it European? I think it is this process of Islam in becoming European from an outside reference to an indigenous one, which is this time span that we have to understand, which is problematic. It's very short time span, maybe. Maybe it will never happen. We don't know. But this is what I am trying to highlight. So, of course, when we speak of Europe and Islam, they are these two different entities, two different historical formations. One is a universal religion. It's not compatible. But yet we know that there's this kind of encounter between these two within the same chronotop. That's what I'm going to argue. This is what makes the European experience a novel one. European experience, which we thought was almost like in continuation, a linear continuation, European Union as a project coming from the European heritage. I think today there is this disruptive effect of Islam within the European Union. It is this encounter with each other in the same chronotop, that is, the same shared matrix of time and space. But this means already we are away from all framework of integration. I'm not asking the question whether Muslims are integrated to Europe or not in different nation states, but I'm saying that they are sharing, they are becoming contemporary of each other and sharing the same space, becoming European, and that is problematic. I'll come to it. Which means both are, none of them is pre-established entities. We cannot take Europe as a pre-established entity, but it is transformed in its encounter with Islam. The same is true for Islam, because it is selectively interpreted and relearned in European contexts. Muslim migrants are not coming to Europe with the religion in their luggages. They relearn their religion in everyday life. They try to readapt their piousness, as Sabah Madud calls politics of piety. Politics of piety means also relearning even Arabic, for instance, for many young, even Turkish, if they become more pious, or Arabic origin migrants. They relearn the language through Islam. And also it is not the Islam of their families, nor of the given mosques, but there is a kind of relearning process in Europe, which is also bringing new issues in a secular, multi-religious context. So it is already transformed. Even the notion of religion is not given. It is not a fixed category. We think they are Muslims. No, they are becoming Muslims every day, a kind of refashioning themselves as Muslims, refashioning in the sense that they are trying to relearn and adopt the norms, moral norms. So it is not a given category, none of them. That is the word interpenetration, which is not nice, not aesthetically accepted, like a good word. But I think I didn't find anything else to render this two-way change, interpenetration, co-penetration. Because I didn't like the word interaction, because it's too neutral, interaction. I don't like multiculturalism because it doesn't render this kind of interaction. I try to find a word, if you help me to find a better one. I think it might be, we can find a better word. And I think the German word, which was chosen for my book, I'm sorry for the, who can help me for the thing? It's impossible. It's not the same, but my my German friends convinced me because they said it is a very old word, and I like this. I like bringing these old, forgotten words, always absences, you know, like in our minds. It can help. They said to me it's a not used word, so we can change the meaning. And what I like in the word, if I'm not wrong in my interpretation, is this getting closer to each other and metamorphosis. I like the word metamorphosis. So it will help us maybe at the end of the during the discussion, the identity issues. In this interpenetration process, we go away from questions of identity. It is the link which is important, even in confrontation. Now, the second thing that I like with the interpenetration is not only a two-way change, but also the force between the two. Because in the penetration, there is also confrontation. There is forcing, right? Because it's not only dialogue, it's not discursive understanding, but confrontation between the two, the place of conflict. And conflict can bring you closer. That is the idea of the notion. And also thirdly, at the very literal sense, penetration, which I'm sorry, it brings into mind more, we use it in the sociological language this sexual intercourse, social intercourse, but also all gender and sexual issues, because we know that the encounter between Europe and Islam basically takes place not at a very macro level, but at the very level of everyday life practices of understanding gender and issues around sexuality. Not only women, but also issues around sexuality. So that's why my choice of interpenetration to make it more micro level process of confrontation. So there is conflict, there is metamorphosis of the two, and there is this the idea that the real confrontation is on the discussion of sexual issues. Sexuality, gender, I'm not only saying women's, as you see. So coming to, in the word, there is one absent idea, is the encounter between the two is not symmetrical. Never. As all social scientists, we know that no social relation is symmetrical. There's always, of course, asymmetrical relations of power. It's not the same kind of encounter. It's not on equal terms. So, I think you can think of all the controversies which can help you to understand the process of interpenetration, what I understand from penetration. All the controversies bring you to that really issue of disruptive effect of Islam in the European public sphere, how it makes a kind of confrontational issue, how it disrupts from the given, as Orvin Goffman would say, disruptive effect of the newcomers. They destroy, in the sense, the consensual norms and the doxa. So coming back to the notion of chronotop, how it can help us to go deeper in that. First, space issue. Space issue. I think there is a kind of what I call spatial transgression, or in the presence of Islam, spatial transgression. Like, the best example is, of course, the headscarf issue in France. I will give already how the visibility of Islamic science in the public schools. In Germany, it was the other way around, the public teachers, not the students, created a big debate on what is secular and what is public school, should it be allowed or not. So this really meant a kind of redefining the space. Is space neutral? In the French case, is space secular? It's only secularism which defines a neutral space. In the French secular understanding, we need a neutral space in order to have communication. That is the condition for communication. When you come into this room, you have to leave your ethnic, religious, all particularistic signs of belonging in the garde-robe, in the portmanteau, what you call it, in the vestiaire. Mm-hmm. And you come into this room in a way so that you do not show your any particularistic sense of belonging. So that's what it means by secularism. That was the main argument when the law passed, for instance, to ban all religious signs from the public schools, because a public school should be secular, that is, neutral, right? And so therefore the space issue is very important in the encounter with Islam, because these girls who were having their headscarves in the public schools, they both, it was a question of space. Do we share the same space? Now I'm speaking of the physicality of the space, not public space as a kind of discursive in which all citizens can discuss and debate issues that matter to them. But I'm speaking about space as a physical space, how we share the same space. The second, of course, space issue, now maybe in a more extravagant way, is the burqa debate in France, where there is a law also now which forbids the burqa, the total veiling, from the streets. Well, in each case, already the naming mattered. Naming, how we label these practices. Is it veiling, hijab? Is it turban in the Turkish case? Is it niqab, burqa, total veiling? As you see, there are all these words which try to capture the meaning of a behavior which maybe is not easy to label, right? Because it is not headscarf, everyone can have a headscarf. It was very neutral. And in time, there was a semantic shift from headscarf debate in France to Islamic veiling and now to total veiling. Now, how we label these issues in the public sphere is a very important matter. But I think we always need a readjustment because the meaning that girls, subjective meanings that girls give to these Islamic covering and the public perceptions are not the same always. And because it's a novel experience, we have difficulties of naming it. And we think if we give the original Arabic name, we capture it. Okay? That's, of course, an illusion. It is not by naming it burqa or niqab or hijab that we think we can really understand the meaning. But in an ironical way, at the same time, the whole European languages now use these words. You are familiar with it. Right? So that distant Taliban burqa, although Afghans don't use burqa, this medieval imagery is now in your everyday life. And the French deputies, they are discussing day and night. They created a commission on burqa. They have invited me. But there was no sense of humor. They didn't understand. They gave me a lesson of republicanism and secularism. And I don't think you can find it in the internet. So they were discussing what is a burqa. That's getting really familiar with other people's culture in confrontation, right? A communist origin deputy discussing burqa. I don't think he has ever discussed feminism before. So the space issue, who has authority over space? That's a power struggle. That's why there's a commission, parliamentary commission, to pass a law that bans, who defines who is going to enter, who is not going to enter, and what are the conditions to make part of it. So space issue, you see, it can change from public schools to streets, but also space, as in the case of Turkish membership, I will come, to European Union is space too. So there are different scales of space that we can discuss. But there is some kind of transgressive feature in this space, disruptive and transgressive. That is, others want to enter into this space in ways not in conformity with our values, right? Spatial transgression in many senses, because they came, it is true, they have crossed the boundaries. It is crossing the boundaries. And the second one is time. So space, already established space, publicness in Europe, is disturbed by this Islamic presence. Okay, it's questioned. What is our publicness? So Europe is questioning itself, its own publicness, through Islamic presence. That is our first recentering. Second time, it is getting contemporary with each other, yet in anachronic terms. I said the question of Europe and Islam is this proximity in time and in space. Time dimension is also very complicated because Islam doesn't share the same time. We thought it was going to disappear from the more you have modernization, less religion we thought we will have. It is some of the Indian post-colonial thinkers as well who have said the same thing for peasants. We thought they were going to disappear as actors, right? So religious actors were also thought to disappear with development of secular modernization. And here comes religious actor and plus Islam. So the time dimension here is also destabilized, because it's like from medieval, it's always this, the conception of the medieval ages are always in a kind of ideological way, as if it's before the Enlightenment. So the Islam, like, not yet entered into modernity. Here they are in Europe. So the time dimension is very important in terms of contemporary and modern. They question, I think they force us to question, what is contemporary and what is modern. Because we think, normally, when you are contemporary, you are modern. Right? And we speak almost contemporary modernity, which is an oxymoron, you cannot be. In the Turkish case, Turkish people or people who speak Turkish would know, it's a very interesting notion which intrigued me always, çağdaşlaşma. Already it sounds very bizarre. Çağdaşlaşma, which means contemporanization. Yes. Contemporanization. It is a contradiction in terms. Either you are contemporary, you cannot project yourself to future. You cannot project the notion of contemporary to the future. It's a nonsense. Okay. So we say çağdaşlaşma, meaning modernization. And the law that passed in Turkey, or the law or the regulation that forbid the Islamic headscarves in the universities, they have justified the ban, saying this is not a contemporary way of clothing. That's again very absurd. It's contemporary, it's not coming from other ages. It is totally contemporary. What they meant, this is not modern. What is modern is Western, in a way. Right. So Islam is becoming contemporary, sharing the same time with Europeans, but in anachronic terms, not sharing the same cultural orientation. And I think this is very important, because always in modernity we have this anachronism with modernity. This is the critique of modernity. It is almost inbred into modernity. Right? Even green movement is in anachrony with modernity. That's why it became a green movement. Right? All post-68 movements can be considered as anachronic with industrial modernity. So anachronism can be a force of creativity and criticism in modernity. But I think at least in the case of how Islam disrupts this matrix of chronotop, that's what I'm getting at, this complicated thing by empirical examples, right? The matrix of European chronotop, time and space, which is taken as given, as natural to us, as a doxa. We think that's how we should be in a public school, in public life, and as citizens. The disruptive effect is we question things that we take for granted, right? That seems to us as natural. That is really the first step for reflexivity. So, first thing that we question is decoupling contemporary with modernity. Or who has, or how we discuss the values that we will consider as modern. And the second is the space issue. When we speak of commonness or common living, it's also sharing the same space. So who has power on the space? Power also brings the state power. Because public and republic. In the public, French would say, you have citizens, but also you have republic, that is the state authority. That is the intermediation. Let me come to the Turkish case. I think Turkish candidacy, it was one of the major events that changed the course of European history, I would say, that will change more and more, but already it's made a flexion, let me say, a flexion. First, in the sense that Europe, first time it was debated after the veiling issue, almost concomitantly at the same time, the Turkish candidacy, which seemed to be a foreign affair issue, became more and more a internal politics issue, domestic politics issue. And not only domestic politics issue, but a public issue. Public meaning all citizens are concerned. It mobilized almost every kind of people. It reshuffled right-left distinctions, for instance. It blurred totally in France. You cannot say Socialist Party for and others Republicans against. No, it totally reshuffled. But it is especially, it really made European issue a societal debate maybe for the first time. Not agriculture, not Europe institutional. It brought it closer to public citizens. And not in Germany. Maybe that's why you're looking at me, because you don't have that feeling. Now you're saying, that's not how we lived. It happened in France. So it was not related with migration issue, because there is the number of migrants in France is much less. So it was not related with immigration issue. It first started in France, and with Giscard d'Estaing's words, at that time he was responsible of the élargissement of Europe, of the expansion of Europe. He said, he was the first to question the legitimacy of Turkish candidacy, legitimacy. And this is a word that you have to keep in mind, because Turks were members since 1963. I mean, candidate for membership since 1963. And he said, that's a big country, but there is no reason for Turkey to be part of Europe, because it's a different country, totally different civilization, different culture. Besides, its capital is not in Europe. So question of frontiers were raised, as you see. It doesn't belong to same space and same frontiers. Frontiers first, geographic frontiers. And Turks were arguing, but what about Cyprus? Look at Cyprus and Turkey. And Turks were still arguing with passion and desire that they made part of Europe. So, and then it really continued the debate, and it continues still, saying that Turkey cannot make part of it because of the frontiers. And there is no reason for Turkey to be a member. It is not a religious issue, but it's a different civilizational issue. So the issue of difference was brought more and more. And sometimes some kind of ridiculizing the Turkish membership, saying, why not Russia then? Why not Morocco? Okay, because French elites, majority of them have private houses in Morocco. And they like to... They like having some privileges. And although they are very republican for themselves, monarchy of the others is comfortable. Okay. So this was some... And I couldn't at that time convince my Turkish friends who really believed and who mobilized the whole society for the perspective of Europe that there was something wrong going on, and the Turkish membership was questioned more and more. They said this is French exceptionalism. Well, this is second issue that I would like to leave for our discussion. Is French attitude is an exception, or is it becoming more and more spread out all over Europe, becoming contagious? Contagieux is the word, contagious. That's for discussion. Do you think Germany is totally different in that respect, or joining as well these new trends? But what is interesting with the, therefore, Turkish candidacy is it triggered, it was a kind of catharsis to debate on European identity. And I think this was the first time Europe was thinking, reflecting upon itself as an identity, not as a project, not as a union, but as an identity. I have used it as, is othering Turkey identifying Europe? So it started some kind of identifying Europe in counter-distinction with Turkey. So whatever Turkey has done, it was perceived as the other of Turkey, or the other of Europe. And what was again interesting is the proximity. because the Turkish file, which was quite thick of problems, that is human rights, Kurdish rights, memory of the coming to terms with Armenian genocide, and all this military effect, thick file, was getting less thick, as people would say. Turkey has started to do her homework a lot. The moment Turkey was becoming eligible, therefore getting closer to European membership, it was questioned its legitimacy, you see. So there was a kind of identity issue and othering. The moment Turkey was getting closer to eligibility. And just a footnote, but I can't help myself thinking that abortion is still illegal in Poland. And Poland joined Europe with that law. Just think... It's also illegal in Germany? No. No, it's technically illegal. It's not illegal. It's not. No. But just for the exercise of your minds, could you imagine a second that Turkey tried to join Europe with a law that forbids abortion rights to women? That would have been perceived in a totally different frame. That is Islam and all. No, you didn't get what I meant. I didn't make myself explicit enough. Ah, okay. It was clear. Okay. So, I think the Turkish candidacy in relation, coming back to this chronotop again, this is my new obsession I have started, is why it is so disruptive and interesting. It played a cathartic role, yes, but why? First of all, it is in relation to past, Ottoman Empire. The relation of Ottoman Empire emerges in the memory, because memories make part of our publics, battle of memories. And Mostar Bridge, just to give one example, has been constructed by Ottoman architects. So we find the Ottoman presence already in the European past, of course. But also in the debates, it was also said formally, for instance, accepting Turkey would mean to Europe to forget the Western victory over the Ottoman army when the siege of Vienna was lifted 1683. That is, accepting Turkey would mean to forget about the victory of Europe against Turks in Vienna. That is a very important moment. So it would mean rewriting history of the past with the Ottomans. Of course, you're going to tell me European Union started like that. That is, Germans and French became together to rewrite history differently. But that, therefore, the Ottoman past in the chronotop, the past is important. Vienna siege, Mostar Bridge. But also, I think it is the only country which has Muslim migrants in Europe and only Muslim membership. Muslim majority with a candidacy in Europe. That is Muslim migrants and also a candidacy for Europe as a Muslim majority country. There is no other Muslim majority country which is a member, which is a candidate for membership. I think a second shift that happened with this debate with Turkey, that is, that's why it is important for us, because it is neither post-bloc nor post-colonial. It changes our conversation. We don't have any comfort. We cannot say, well, post-colonial thinking can help us to understand. I think there's a limit to that. That's what I'm getting at. Okay? So it's neither post-bloc nor post-colonial. And in this debate, I think another shift, flexion happened. The unspoken, tacit equation between Europe and its Christian heritage becomes more and more apparent. The first moment was the Pope Benedict XVI lecture, you will remember, in 2006 at the University of Regensburg in Germany, when he gave this, again, very controversial speech, saying that Europe should be defined in its in its relation to its Christian heritage and values of rationality, which is not shared by Islam. And he called intellectuals to be more receptive of the Christian heritage, to define the roots of Christian heritage, to define the European identity. And I think that was another thing. So the change, we see how Europe is changing or redefining its boundaries, both geographic and civilizational. And secondly, in relation to its past, it used to be thought as a secular unity, and it is becoming more and more, maybe, religious in a way. So in recentering Islam, we start reading Europe from a different angle. That's what I'm getting at. Well, coming a little bit to the Turkish situation, for the Turks, again in relation to Kronotop, this is our fil conducteur, the notion which will help us. For them, they thought there was another turning point, is 3rd of October 2005, because all these debates ended up, you're going to tell me, with opening of the negotiations, what we call opening of talks with Europe. So it is apparently is moving towards this membership, we can say. However, I think the feeling in the public, in Turkey and in Europe, it is already an unrealizable project. That's what we have the feeling, at least for the moment, that Turkey, although we accepted the opening of talks, it is rather distanced from Europe. Well, that is important for the Turkish self-perception, because they thought they were very natural members for the European Union, as I said, for many reasons. I'm not going to go in detail, but just in one word, Turks thought they made a civilizational conversion in leaving the Ottoman multi-religious, multi-ethnic empire and creating this republican, secular nation state. They wanted to make part of the civilized nation states of Europe. So the whole change from dress codes to modes of address, pushing religion out of the public life, that meant for Turks to turn their faces towards Europe. But that meant not only at the nation-state level, but everyday life practices. So being part of European Union, this membership, this candidacy, meant for them a kind of natural outcome of this long let's say, development and engagement with the West at first and with Europe the second, westernization, secularization and all this. So this was their self-perception. They thought they were sharing already the same chronotop with Europe. Or at least they were engaged to share the same chronotop. That's what I wanted to capture with çağdaşlaşmak. The whole meaning of, yeah, I love this incredible word, which is a nonsense, Annie. And as the word sounds, it became nonsense. It's terrible. The whole. So this engagement that you think, if you are not in the chronotop, you are becoming. Okay? You are becoming contemporary and sharing the same space, that is European Union, that's all. You're becoming modern and European. But now, I think there's something after this 2005 which happened that nobody now today can speak of the same presence of the Islam, the European perspective in Turkey as it happened before. There is a rupture. That's again my hypothesis. The observers and students of Turkey can question that. But I think that there is the working of the European perspective in Turkey today is not important to understand Turkey. It was before. Or I would say the desire for Europe is lost. The word desire was very interesting because there was really a desire for Europe, and French was very suspicious about it. This was also in the public domain. They were saying, where does this desire come from? Is this the Trojan horse? Trojan horse that will bring Islam in a, you know, there's books like that, Trojan horse. I should have wrote the pictures. Turkey represented as the Trojan horse of Islam. So where they were saying, we don't want to have any forced marriages. Turkey always thought as a man, forced marriage, you know, not woman, but man, again, taking over Europe. So we don't want to have forced marriage, not forced marriage among Turks. They are saying Europe and Turkey shouldn't be a forced marriage. So that's why politicians are forcing the marriage. We don't want that marriage. That's the public majority rule. So they came to the idea that they're for Turkey, there will be a referendum. In any case, if it happens, that is popular vote. People will decide if Turkey will make part of it, of Europe or not. I leave it to your evaluation, I think. No. So what happened, this change for Turkey? Europe's resentment. On the one hand, indigestion, let's say. Europe doesn't want it. And then the coming to power of a, I don't know how to say, AKP is the word. Again, labeling is very important. Justice and Development Party. I don't think I can call it Islamist party, but let's say from a Islamic background. All right. Because it's not an Islamist party. And we have to be careful not to reproduce these labels which are not accurate. But the coming to power, this AKP, that is, how you know it, AK Party, AKP, which is AK Party, therefore Muslim, we understand they are really Muslim in the sense not looking at male partners, but their spouses, they are all covered. Okay, so that also, of course, meant a lot in terms of this chronotop of this project of Çağdaşlaşma, because Islam is coming back and bringing new visibilities of Islam into the space that where they were forbidden from public universities, public life, from the republic. And this is still very much debated during the commemoration of the republic, that is 29th of October, just 3 days ago. The fact that military and the Republican People's Party still boycott this, even the commemoration, the ceremony, because the spouses of the prime minister and president and some others are covered in accordance with their Islamic faith. You see, so it is again space issue, power. Although they are in power, they can be boycotted in not going to the official ceremony of the Turkish Republic to defend the Turkish Republic. You see the complexity of the issue. Okay, only those who know, it's very complicated. So, third, I think, important event is Turkish vote, which didn't pass in the parliament during the Iraq invasion, Iraq war of United States. Turkey didn't back up the American decision and to pass their troops from Turkey. So this was a very important turning point because Turkey took a distance from the American foreign policy and American alliance. So as you see, two Wests. She found herself in the fracture between two Wests, West America, West Europe. Europe resentment and with America distance, which ended up with the flotilla issue, that is how you call the flotilla issue to boycott, yeah, thank you, to boycott the Gaza occupation of Israel. And this also now really make people to question, is Turkey turning its back to the West? That was the Economist's review and all the in the West, that is the issue today. Is Turkey turning its back to Europe? Is Turkey is leaving Europe? Is it becoming Islamic? Is it becoming anti-Western? And I think that's not my point of view, to make it clear and blunt. I think there is indeed demilitarization in Turkey, which goes hand in hand with democratization, which means also more Islam, that's right, but also more debate on ethnic differences, like Kurdish issue is more and more debated publicly and trying to find a solution. Also, more religious minorities, Alevis, but also non-Muslim minorities. Armenian issue, Armenian genocide today is no longer a taboo in the public debate. So therefore, without the perspective of European, Europe as a perspective working in the Turkish democracy, Turkey is changing and not in one way or another. That is the question that was raised. If Turkey doesn't join Europe, what will happen? This was the journalists asking these questions to us, but already knowing the answer. If Turkey is rejected by Europe, what will happen to Turkey? What is the answer? What is the answer they have in their heads? The answer is given in the question. The answer was, well, either it will become more Islamist or more military to avoid Islamism. Okay? I think for the moment, neither nor. Neither nor. On the contrary, there is more demilitarization and democratization, to my mind. But what is more important for us now, it is not the political issue, but it is the issue that once Turkey doesn't have this self-perception that she's sharing the same matrix of time and space with Europe, there's a kind of autonomization from the definitions of European modernity, which is not an autonomization that is thought through post-colonialism. That's what I was getting at, right? Because Indians have already worked that through. But in terms of post-colonialism, that's autonomization from definitions of Western modernity and opening to critique of modernity or multiple modernities or alternative modernities. This is another title of Dipesh Chakrabarty's book is Habitations of Modernity, trying to show there are different ways of, different habitations of modernity in India, giving examples. But they came to this through post-colonialism, questioning colonialism. Autonomization from Western modernity occurred through criticism of colonial past and subaltern studies. Whereas what I am showing here, we cannot call it post-colonial, right? But it is, again, from within Europe, but there is a way of decentering Europe. That's why it's more important. It is only through decentering Europe that Muslims, migrants, but also Turks and others appropriate some of the values and transform it. And they maybe give a new face, a new image, a new impulse to Europe itself. Why? I think because there is potential in the case of Turkey today of transmitting some of the values that we can consider as modern, but not Western, and resonating in other contexts. I think that is... I'm finishing. I saw that. Okay. I was getting more and more. Okay. I think what we call, what is attractive for me in Europe or European project, not identity, is this capacity to resonate in other contexts, to make your life better, to think of your conditions of life, to think of yourself reflexively. That was the force of Europe, how to make our lives better, not only in terms of material things, but in terms of art and social sciences, how to reflect upon yourself. Now, the question of freedom is not sufficient. What you do with freedom is more important. What Europe has done with freedom gave sciences, arts, better cities, that all quality things are very important as well. So, but today, I think maybe Europe is short of this resonating power for three reasons. One, again, how this encounter with Islam will help us to understand the changes in Europe that we have to be aware. One, the semantic shift in the word, in the notion of civilization. Because in order to resonate in other contexts other than yours, you have to think that your very local practices, experience has a meaning which goes beyond your local boundaries. claim for a kind of claim for universalism. Civilization, the notion of European civilization, meant that kind of universalism, which resonated, although we are very critical of that, I'm not there, and during the 19th century, which also gave to other societies the illusion or the dream that all societies can pass through these stages, starting from positivism of Auguste Comte. Each society can rid off the metaphysical stage and arrive to positivism or human rights or feminism. But today the semantic shift happened. I see Norbert Elias. I love reading Norbert Elias. In Norbert Elias's book, he compares France and Germany. Maybe you do not agree fully, but the way he compares them in relation to this debate between culture and civilization, he would say French had this claim of this universal civilization they want to share with everyone, and Germans were very much looking for their own culture. But of course, this is a very, very binary, too simplistic, but it gave some kind of hint to think of the semantic shift today. I would say today it is this definition of Elias's sense of particularistic notion of culture, not civilization in this universalist sense, that takes over in Europe. That is, it is our civilization that cannot be shared by the others. Civilization is something not to be shared, but to be differentiated from the others. We are the ones who are civilized, more like civilizing mission, and not the others. Right? So the notion of the semantic shift of civilization is an indicator for us to understand that Europe changed its self-perception and self-presentation to others. And in the face of Islam, they are saying they are not sharing the same civilization. Okay? Which is like a bit Huntington, of course, you should recall Huntington debate. Second, the issue is not in relation to the other cultures, but also in relation to how we define the very values, the cultural values of democracy. It is more and more on... Do I have 5 minutes or three? It is more and more, I would call, secular sexual democracy, right? Sexual themes are at the center of defining democracy. Like, I give you examples for migrants in Netherlands. They were giving a kind of film to see if migrants can accept permissiveness, homosexuals. So you have to pass tests. And in Denmark, a covered deputy had to start her campaign for elections in a gay bar, to show that she was very tolerant in relation to gays and lesbians, because this is Denmark, okay. In France, this is not what you are required. You have to be a Republican, good secularist Republican. So I think all these issues become a test to see if you are really sharing the same values. And I think it is really defined in terms of what is to be a free person is very much defined in terms of, I don't go into detail, secular feminism and 68 movements heritage. I will come. Third, I think the shift in relation to Islam is the emergence of new public figures all over Europe. I think it started with whom I should start. Pim Fortuyn in Netherlands, who was killed, but not by a Muslim, but by a Dutchman. But first, again, very much related, homosexual, assertive homosexual, saying that he is threatened by Islam. So there's a new, therefore, political configuration happening, because gay movements and feminist movements, some of them are taking position against, that's what I'm coming at, against Islam. So Pim Fortuyn, of course, another person who is much better known now, Geert Wilders, but also Ayaan Hirsi Ali. I start with Netherlands, because Netherlands were the place of multiculturalism, and there is a very important shift and for the end of multiculturalism. Very important public intellectual, Paul Scheffer, was the first to announce that it is the end of multiculturalism. It doesn't work. because it means cultural avoidance, and cultural avoidance bring terrorism and this and that. And therefore these new figures, new public figures, are also very, it's all over Europe, not only in one nation state. Ayan Hirsi Ali kind of figure is the Muslim secular voices, very offensive against Islam. And I think we see all that kind of new Muslim secular voices. I don't know how to call it more neutrally than that. I think you have here Necla Kelek. Can I call her in? Can I put her in the same constellation? So I'm kind of coming to this. But we have in France the movement like Ni Put Ni Soumise against secular Muslims. And the head of this movement now in the government, Fadela Amara. It's very interesting. So new secular Muslim voices in the public sphere joining these neo-populist movements using a lot of Islamophobia or Turkish against Turkish membership. In France, it started with Philippe de Villiers. You have never heard his name, a marginal politician who started saying no à la Turquie, and who became more and more important, but Sarkozy took over, so he was marginalized. And of course, in Switzerland, I think it's very interesting because, as you see, I'm drawing a map of Europe, not in terms of the members of European Union, but where there is an encounter with Islam, and it transforms self-presentation, but also the change in the political spectrum. In Switzerland, this emerged, the new public figure who fought against the Minare construction, again, this visibility of Islam. For a Muslim, it's very difficult to think of a mosque without a minare. I mean, it's also, you know, to be a Muslim in Europe means a lot of selective items in your mind. How to minare? I'm now seeing everywhere minares because the minare referendum made me much more receptive to shapes of minarets, how to cut the minarets, how to transplant them without a mosque, or a mosque which can be invisible and inaudible, silent mosques. These are all European Islam. And Oscar Freisinger became a public figure in Switzerland, and he is, I mean, I have to compete with these people. They are circulating in the media much more than us because he referred to Islam. That's what I'm saying. Islam makes people, my first point, more visible, more audible, and more public. Okay? He became public because of this confrontation with Islam. Of course, I came to the last example in Germany. I hope you already had anticipated Mr. Sarrazin. A very interesting public figure, which is for me nothing else than these new public figures who gain visibility and audibility, and now he will be also in circulation because of this encounter. But defining on the very basis of space and time, saying they are not like us, they are not sharing, therefore they are not contemporary, they are not modern, and they cannot share the same time, same space, that is Europe. That's exclusionary politics. Okay, what is, therefore, just last word, is, I would say, Islam as a recentering force, as I said, is force. It creates new constellations. People that were very different in their convictions, very different in their social historical trajectories, they find themselves in the same assemblage. They make public. Okay? Like Theo van Gogh and Ayan Hirsi Ali. They made a film. It ended up in a tragic way. Theo van Gogh was killed, but in a way, they came closer. Okay? Migrant in that sense. And or Miss Necla Kelek and Sarrazin, I don't know how she will be reacting, but they will be finding themselves in a new kind of, we'll see.
Interesting couple.
You see? How Islam makes people getting closer as well. New alliances, new acquaintances. So what I mean by Antwerpen-Lungen, it gets closer in confrontation. That is the idea. But only if you recenter Islam that you can understand these changes in Europe. To rethink of Europe anew means also that all this means to me that the hegemony over the matrix of chronotop, European chronotop, time and space, hegemony of Europe is over. I think the reactions of these new public figures, I would say, illustrate that the loss of the hegemony. It is a kind of scream. They scream because there is a loss of the definition over the hegemony of this matrix of time and space, because you have to get rid of the others. And we are really debating. There's a power struggle over the conquest of space, but also the cultural orientation of this space, that is, the very values of what we define as modern. Thank you.